You're listening to a 3CR podcast recorded in the 3CR Community Radio Studio in Melbourne, Australia. If you like what you hear, please consider donating or subscribing so we can keep bringing you more independent community content. For more information, go to 3cr.org.au.
The 3CR Gardening Show is coming to you today from the Woi Wurrung Nation. We acknowledge the Wurundjeri people as the traditional owners of this land. We recognise the practices of care and cultivation of the land and waters by the First Peoples and pay our respects to their elders past and present. Wherever you are and wherever you garden, we encourage you to know whose land you're on.
Good morning, 3CR. Good morning, 3CR listeners. My name's John Arnott. You're listening to another 3CR gardening show. Apologies that we've jumped in a little bit late into the show. We were doing an outside broadcast. We're actually locked out of the studio this morning. Somebody, who knows what that, who it was, they forgot their keys. So Greg, if you're listening in, Greg from the studio, we owe you one. I owe you one, Greg. Thanks for coming in and letting us into the studio. Folks, we've got a terrific show lined up for you today. It's the first day of spring tomorrow. The first day of spring is Wattle Day. So we'll be focusing on the genus Acacia, amongst other things, for this show. So a little bit of a theme show around wattles. In the studio, we have three terrific panelists, a really knowledgeable and quite diverse panel. We have Amy Downey, horticulturist in the Royal Botanic Gardens, Melbourne.
Yep.
Hey, Amy, how you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for having me. It's so lovely to be here and meet Roger.
Finally. Oh, yes.
Yeah, and Adrian as well. There's been a long time coming, so it's lovely to...
Well, Roger Elliott, and look, I've actually got something to say about Roger here. If you've ever fallen in love with Australian native plants, there's a good chance that our next panellist, Roger Elliott, has had something to do with it. Roger is a renowned horticulturist alongside wife Jen. The Elliotts have helped generations of horticulturists, ecologists, naturalists, people interested in the environment, in their native plant journeys. Nice to see you, Rog.
Thanks, John. I'm feeling mature.
We had you. You weren't in the studio for the retrospective show, but for those that everyone knows Roger Elliott, but how did you get involved with the studio? Was it 30 odd years ago, Rog?
Probably that. It was in the 80s, 1980s, I think. When Alan Gilbert was involved and were asked to come on to talk about Australian plants, which were a bit strange then, I think.
Yeah. And you were a bit of an outrider.
Yeah, yeah. And so it just continued, and Gwen got more involved than I did. She used to come in every week.
Gwen was a host.
10 years or something. Not as a host. She was just one of the panellists.
Yeah.
Pam was the host. You know, she was the pet, you know.
So Pam. She was a talent.
Well, yeah. Yes. Yeah, no, she came in for quite a while.
Yeah.
And she got involved in having a special thing each week for raising money.
Yeah.
And they raised an enormous amount of money.
Huge amount of money. Our other panellists, and last but certainly not least, Adrian Keane, arborist and landscape architect.
Was a landscape architect.
Yeah.
Reformed.
reformed landscape architect. Terrific to have you in the show, mate.
Thank you.
The retrospective show was acknowledging that the studio is 50 years old and the gardening show is 49 years old, and we're coming into our 50th year next year. So we're going to have a bit of a big bash next year.
It's exciting.
Yeah, it is. It is exciting.
It's
like 50 years of...
Big milestone.
Yeah, 50 years of the gardening show. We're thinking that we'll... Because it started out of series, and we're thinking that we might do an outside live outside broadcasted series, you know, go back to the future. And
that would be so fun.
That'd be great, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Yes, you have to.
Yeah, yeah, we shall.
Yep.
Thanks, folks. Apologies for the late start. You are listening to the 3CR Garden Show, and we've got a great panel. Adrian Keane, Amy Downey, Roger Elliott, and my name's John Arnott. Look, before we do a bit of a deep dive into wattles and what we're doing in our working lives. We thought we might just reflect a little bit about what we're doing in our home gardens just at the moment. And I had a brief text conversation with you, Amy. You were about to do something to your lawn.
Yes, I am hoping slash wanting to change my front lawn into make it all garden bed. So I'm sort
excellent.
Of new.
Oh, excellent.
Yay. Yeah. What a good idea. Oh, good. I need this support. Because we're pretty new. You know, we've only had our house for maybe a year-ish. Mm. So I'm just started, you know, we've got a little fernery in the back garden and started doing some planting there. But the front garden is mostly lawn. So, yeah, I was talking with you, John, about hoping to now start to transition that into garden bed and start to, well, interested to hear your thoughts. I was thinking of digging up the lawn, but I have also, it's been suggested that maybe, you know, you do the cardboard trick where you lay the cardboard, water, mulch.
Depends on what you want to do with your garden bed. Is it going to be a productive garden? Is it going to be an ornamental garden?
Maybe more ornamental.
Yeah.
Mm. I think full of natives, ideally.
That's good. That gets a nod of approval from Roy. Yeah. Okay. Down here this morning. Yeah, that's
I'm surrounded by the right people. Yeah.
I'm pretty liberal. Really. I got, you know, got rhubarb.
Yeah.
In my place. Got some broad beans. Plus a few other things.
Yeah. Well, you've got a Lagerstromia out the front of your house, Roger.
Yes, I have.
Yeah.
It was there when we moved in.
Yeah.
Now we've got three because we got rid of all the lawn in the front. And forked it all over.
Two lawns down, three lawns down. I got rid of our lawn.
Forked it all over, and that the Lagerstromia actually suckered.
Yeah,
so we've got nice cops now.
Cool. Yeah.
And what was the process for the three of you potentially of removing your lawn? What did you do?
We just didn't want to have lawn.
Yeah. And so did you dig it up and then start planting?
Yeah, just forked it over. I'm totally against rotary hoeing. Don't ever rotary hoe anybody, for goodness sake.
No.
It just wrecks the structure.
It sure does, and it gives you a second pan
that's
underneath.
Right,
and
it becomes a waterlogged.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, just dug it over and planted, mass planted.
How big is your lawn, Amy? Or your soon not to be lawn?
Ex-lawn.
Ex-lawn, yeah. I don't even know how to guess. Like, big enough.
Big enough? Bigger than the studio, which is about 3x3?
Yes, a little bit bigger, maybe a studio and a half.
Studio and a half. So
okay, so it's not a small space.
Pardon?
That's not a tiny little space.
It's a good size.
Yeah.
It's enough size, but also it doesn't feel too big that it would be, you know, outrageously hard to maybe do.
No, that's fine. That was probably about the size of what we took out. Roughly, though.
Yep.
20 square metres-ish.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, what we did is we actually sprayed the lawn first because it was full of creeping grasses.
Yes.
And we thought, well, we wouldn't want those to persist.
No.
Dug it over.
Yep.
Yeah, just to decompact because our lawn was quite compacted.
Yes.
So, decompacted it and mulched it.
And then, mulch, of course, and organic matter and things through.
Didn't need to in this instance. Because of the, it was just to decompact it. But, and then planted it out. It was interesting that people were walking past. First thing we did is we tore our fence down and opened our property to the street.
Yeah.
And then we killed the lawn. And all these people were walking past saying, what are you doing? I'm just killing the lawn. But trust me, I'm a horticulturist.
Watch this space.
Watch this space.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Probably thinking, what are you going to kill next?
The street tree disappears. Oh, shit.
But Roger, you've been in your place for over 10 years?
Yeah, probably about 13 years.
13 years.
So we're in one of these things called a village.
Yeah.
And so we think we've got the best site in the village. We can look right down a road. And out the back we have a jungle, which we've planted.
It's a very beautiful jungle.
Mm.
And Gwen says it's a happy place. It just sits and looks. And we have things like Grevillea chericei, which you can't see the flowers on.
Oh, wow.
But the birds can.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
You can't see the flowers because they're tucked into the vegetation.
Well, the colour. Have a look.
Stunning.
They camouflage in.
Initially, when it was introduced to cultivation, I don't know, about the 1960s or something, It was called the Blue Grevillea.
The Blue Grevillea.
There's virtually no blue in it.
No.
But it's a translucent green.
Yeah.
But, it's a plant that grows up to around about, probably might get to 3 metres.
Yeah.
But you can prune it back. You can hedge it if you want. But it's amazing. The birds, yes, they know.
It's there for them.
Oh, yeah, the shape of the flowers are there and they're in their colour range.
And was it a big adjustment to go from the big native garden to the courtyard garden?
Yeah, it was, John, and it was one of those things. I wasn't, you know, I know Gwen was probably more keen than I, but it's worked out well.
Yeah.
And it's amazing what you can stick in a small garden. We've got two big Dorianthes out the back, or three now.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So they haven't flowered yet, but next year they're going to flower.
I remember there was one Friends of the Botanic Gardens, Cranbourne Gardens plant sale, and there was a big old brachychiton that you would. It was experimental because you were going to plant it horizontal or near to.
Yeah.
Did that work?
No, that didn't. it was virtually a U shape.
Okay. Okay.
And we did plant it out, and it went for quite a while, but probably not the right position for it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Need a bit more light, a bit more space around it.
I think that's probably right.
Yeah. And Adrian, your garden's in Reservoir.
Yes, we're in Reza. Yeah.
But you've got your garden, but you're the sort of unofficial curator for the board, or the official curator, is it? Or
I commandeered the communal area. Our little villa units, they're quite common in Reservoir. So you get sort of single story brick units. And there's four of us in sort of an L shape with a big communal lawn area.
Yeah.
And you look on Google Street View, there used to be a half-dead Fittinia or a half-dead Lilypilly. Yeah. They got chopped down by someone. So it was just lawn. So we've taken sections of it out, but we've got a lot of oxalis. So I was like, how am I going to get the bulbs out? So I hand-sifted my soil to get the bulbs out. And it was pretty successful. One section I didn't hand-sift, and that's a nightmare because that's got my species grevilleas in it. And so all winter I've been like trying to, so it's like, okay, I won't pull it out because I was listening to the show and then if you pull them out, the little bowl will split.
That's right.
And then you get 1,000 more. So I'm sort of gently lifting and then snip. So that's going to be a work in progress. But yeah, if you've got oxalis, just have a think about how to get rid of that because that's been my biggest problem. Oxalis and the little running couch grass.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Because there's all these big old structural roots in the soil and the couch has grown through them. So I can't get it out.
Yeah.
So it just keeps popping out and then it will snap when I try to pull it out.
Yeah.
But it's fine. The garden's doing really, really well.
That's great.
I mean, of the weeds that you wouldn't want in your garden, you've got the top two.
Oh, yeah. I know. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, oxalis is an interesting one because if you just chip away at it.
Yeah, I've gotten it sort of the base sort of biomass of it all has come down.
Yeah.
But it's persistent. And and I'm not at the stage where I can't plant really fine detail. Like I bought some Bossier prostrata to plant out. Mm. So that's going to be touch and go. Like, will that get swamped? We'll see.
Yeah.
Because I know of a farmer over in South Australia, a mad Eremophila nut, but he was an excellent farmer. But his place was just all oxalis.
Mm.
And then he started cultivating it just before it flowered.
Okay.
And probably over about 10 years, he got rid of it.
Oh,
cultivating
so
as in physically removing?
With ploughing.
Oh, okay.
Type of plough. You know, he was a farmer. He
was right.
Crop and sheep. And, just by doing it before it flowered, so there's no new bulbs.
Yeah, okay. So
ones are gone, or not gone, but, yeah, and he got rid of it that way.
Sort of weaken it over time.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, terrific. Back to your lawn.
Yes.
Where is your garden? What suburb?
Greensboro.
Yes. So you're on clayey soil?
Yes, clayey soil. We're sort of southwest facing.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So a little bit of, sort of afternoon, midday-ish sun.
Yeah.
Mm. And we've got a little bit of garden bed around the outside and then the rest is lawn. So some people have suggested that I just start with a small patch, just to see how things go, see how, I guess, things grow in the clay soil as well.
Clay is good for a lot of things.
Yeah.
People, think, oh, I've got clay. But that's it's probably clay loam rather than pure clay
unless
you're in Merry or
The Merry mud.
That black sticky. But it's amazing what
horrible stuff
what you can grow in clay.
Well, some acacias, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm. So perfect for today.
Yeah, well, that's right. Even this little thing is grows in sand. It's called an apodasmia.
Apodasmia. Rusty, I think.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Yeah, it used to be called Leptocarpus brownii.
Yeah, right.
But that grows in sand naturally, yet we've got it growing in our place in volcanic loam.
Really?
Fine.
Yeah.
So worth giving things a try just to see how
they
go. For sure.
Yeah.
Like you see Gunguru all through Northcote. Yeah. They shouldn't technically grow on heavy clay, but they're alive.
Yeah.
That being the Eucalyptus casea?
Yes. Yeah. Well, they're like Northcote birch trees.
The Northcote birch.
Yeah. We get people trying to constantly plant them as street trees, and because of the weeping habit, they whip trucks, whipping kids, whipping everything. And it's like, well, no, I don't want to fall around, but
In your garden, Adrian, do you have curatorial authority?
Yes, I am a bit of a dictator. No one's coming in. No one's coming into my space. It was funny, the neighbour had a dead Fritinia removed from his backyard that the possums got to. And so Jim's tree removal turned up and I was like, what are you doing?
What are you doing?
What are you here for? You're not touching my eucalyptuses, are you? And they're like, whoa, no, we're just removing your neighbour's dead tree. I'm like, oh, okay, that's fine.
As you were.
Yeah, nothing to see here.
Mostly native plants in your block?
Yes, I've got a Joshua tree and got one exotic orchid. It's pretty Puritan.
Joshua tree being the succulent.
Yes, the iconic yucca, I don't know the last name, the species name.
Yeah, but it's one of the arborescent
yuccas. Yeah. I smuggled the seeds back into it.
I'm trying to remember.
I can't remember either.
Joshua Menzies. I mean, no, it's not Menzies.
They turn up
totally
in my boots.
Legally,
Yeah.
Might be arborea.
Yeah, could be.
Yeah.
And what was the other one?
It's just a, what is it? It's Oncidium orchid.
Oncidium. Okay. That's the... But the common name for those is
Singapore.
Singapore? Or something with butterflies?
I think it's a butterfly orchid or something. I'm not sure. I got it as a present and I was like, oh, that's really nice. So it's a pretty little orchid, so you can stay. Hang out with my green hoods.
But you're a collector. You got green hoods.
I am a hardcore plant collector. I was thinking about it. I should probably document how many plants are in the, like living plants are in the collection.
You should.
I've got a really hectic Excel spreadsheet with everything in it. And
that's great.
Ticking over thousands of plants at this point.
Thousands of plants. How big is the block?
The block's not big. So our courtyard's probably only 5 by 5 meters. So the main courtyard, that's got the rarest of the rare in it. Stuff that I worry if someone stole it, I'll never find it again. Then there's another small courtyard at the back that's about 2 by 5. And then the communal area, touch and go, 200 square meters, if that.
Yeah.
And there's a whole range of little microclimates I've tailored to get a whole range of stuff from a Bedfordia right through to acacias growing in there. So,
And terrestrial orchids.
Yes. They are so much fun to grow, but they're so much harder than I thought. I keep having little micro failures and it's like, oh no.
And you're doing those in the soil rather than in pots?
No, definitely in pots.
In pots.
We have too many snails. They'll just disappear in a heartbeat. Yep. We tried growing some stackhousia in the ground and that was gone instantly.
Yeah.
There's that many of them.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. Folks, you're listening to the 3CR Gardening Show. On the panel today is Roger Elliott, Amy Downey and Adrian Keane. My name's John Arnott. We're just going to launch into some announcements, so buckle up, folks, because there is a lot on just at the moment.
You could split them through the day, John.
Oh, we possibly could. Yeah. We possibly could. Anyway, let's launch. We'll launch into the community announcements. So this is roughly in chronological order, and I think there's in the order of a dozen things on at the moment, so quite a busy time. Saturday the 5th of September, so next weekend, Australian plant sale at the Australian Plant Society Cardinia, which is Acuna Park in Berwick. Philip Johnson's actually doing a talk out at the APS Cardinia Group as a part of the plant sale next Saturday. He's talking about sustainable gardens using Australian plants. The talk is $5 and can be booked through Humanitix, but the plant sale is free. So that's the Australian Plant Society plant sale at Cardinia next weekend.
You've got a free talk going on too, I think, David Binch.
Oh, David Binch is talking.
Yeah, I think he's talking about grafting or something like that.
Yeah, right.
There.
Yeah, okay.
So that's free.
That as a part of the APS.
Yeah, I think that might be, I forget the time now, might be 12:30 or something like that.
Okay. You could jump on the APS website and it'll have the next level of details if you want to see those, but that's next Saturday. Also next weekend, it's the Fernie Creek Spring Extravaganza. So it's the Fernie Creek Spring Show. The hall, as usual, will be chock full of spring flowers. And there's some really interesting vendors selling interesting plants at the show. There's Frisbrook Peony Farm with a bunch of quite rare plants from what I can gather. Jane Tonkin from the show is going to be there, Hancock's daffodils, and Craig Gardner. He's got some rare Moreas, which I thought was kind of interesting. He'll only be there on the Saturday, so that's Saturday the 5th. Mm-hmm. For 3CR listeners, tickets to the show, I think, are $9, but kids are free. But for 3CR listeners, we actually have five double passes to hand out. So if you were interested in going to the Fernie Creek Spring Extravaganza next weekend, give us a call on 94150155 and we have five double passes to attend next weekend's show. So thanks so much to the Fernie Creek Horticulture Society, wonderful supporters of the show. The 12th and 13th of September, it's the Australian Plants Expo, APS Yarra Yarra. You know much about that one, Rog?
I haven't been in the last few years, but it's a really good good sale.
Yeah.
One of the best.
One of the best?
Yeah, that's where I get most of my, I have like a little second spreadsheet of where to get. And that's a good go-to. So a really great one there is Goldfields Nursery. He always has the Goldfields Grevillea if you want one.
Excellent. Grevillea Chrysophila.
No, Grevillea Dryophila.
Dryophila. Okay.
Yeah.
Nice foliage.
Nice foliage. So it is that opportunity to tap into some pretty special growers.
Definitely.
Goldfields et al. I think there's about seven different native plant nurseries that...
Yeah, Goldfields, Ironbark, Latrobe Uni, then Phil Vaughan's normally there. Yep. Mims normally there as well with their mints.
Oh, with the mints.
Yep.
Miriam Ford with her Prostanthurus.
Yes.
Wonderful. So that's the Australian Plants Expo, 12th and 13th of September at the Eltham Community Centre, which is 801 Main Road, Eltham. From the 12th of September to the 11th of October, it's the Tesla's Tulip Festival, which is a mega event out in the hills. It's that opportunity to see, is it hectares? It's hundreds and hundreds of square metres of...
Yeah, it's quite large.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's a family-friendly event. The price is $39.50 per person, concession at $35. But it's a massive seasonal celebration of all things tulips. So that's, if you wanted more information on the Tesla Tulip Festival, you could Google www.tulipfestival.com.au. So the Tulip Festival is on from the 12th of September. The Melbourne Clivia Group have their annual expo on Saturday the 19th of September. And that, again, it's an opportunity to tap into some specialist growers of Clivias. There was a debate in the last week's show whether it's Clivia or Clivia.
Clivia. Just,
it's Clivia.
I'm going to go with Clivia.
I've always said Clivia.
Okay, so it's two all.
I'm a little bit Bergana with my spelling and pronunciation.
Mr. Clive.
Yeah.
Well.
So it should be... Clivia, yeah,
that's
right, okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Doesn't matter.
Really. Doesn't matter. No, Clivia, you say Clivia, I say Clivia. I actually say Clivia. So the Clivia show is on Saturday the 19th of September at Build East Uniting Church. And the club, again, very generously, have offered two double passes to 3CR listeners to attend the show. And you can... avail yourself of a double pass by calling 94190155. So there's a couple of options here. 94190155 for the Fernie Creek show, 94190155 for tickets to the Clivier show on the 19th of September. Angier down in Anglesey and Aries Inlet have their wildflower show. Ooh. 19th of September to the 20th of September. You would have attended a few of those over the years, right?
Over the years, yeah, they're great.
They are great.
It's a whole, it's a, more or less a festival. They have art shows and a whole range of things going on.
Music and
music.
Catering.
Yeah, walks, talks.
Yeah, they do walks, yeah. Okay, walks into the Anglesey Heath. It's a hotspot. We were talking about native orchids. It's a real hotspot for
it's
terrestrial
heavenly
orchids.
Heavenly down there.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Top three places for wildflowers for me. Yeah.
In anywhere?
Yeah. Oh, just no Victoria.
Yeah.
Not Australia. Yeah.
I think it's got the greatest concentration of terrestrial orchids of anywhere
in the world.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I think
amazing.
It's a hot spot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Constantly stopping when you're down there.
Yeah.
Like, what's that? What's this? Oh, over here.
I'm interested in your other two.
Brisbane Ranges.
Yep.
Just for proximity to Melbourne and diversity of plant communities.
Yep.
And then obviously the Grampians.
Oh, the Grampians.
And East Gippsland as a whole would be my number four, but it's such a huge area. It's hard to pinpoint one specific area.
Yeah. I guess talking about those heathies, it's Cape Conran and surrounds.
Mm. Yeah,
it's
pretty
beautiful.
Well, even Erinundra National Park, if you want to see something really crazy.
Yeah,
like very going special. For a walk up there, it's just like, what even is any of this?
Yeah. Erinundra feels like if you were to peel the eucalypts back and just replace it with Nothofagus, you could be in Chile.
Yeah, it's stunning.
It's remarkable. Yeah.
Yep.
Any other Victorian hotspots for you, Roger?
Brisbane Ranges are underrated.
Yeah.
It really is.
It's really good.
Because you can do like a casual afternoon drive. You don't even need to get out of your car. You will see everything.
Yeah.
You can see the top two grevilleas, the golden and the Strelitziania, just from the side of your car.
Yeah.
No need to get out. No need to trample. Yeah. Just a casual, just a little squiz while you're sipping an ice break. And you're like, oh, yeah, hello. And then off you go to the next one.
That's right. I always remember when I was pretty young and quite silly, I was out having a look there and collecting corias and coria reflexes.
Ooh,
and I ended up getting about 10 different variants.
Yeah.
So I sent them all into Jim Willis, who was the wonderful man, botanist at the herbarium.
The beautiful Jim Willis.
I said,
what a beautiful man.
I said, Jim, I've got all these, you know, I'm sure they must be different species. And then he wrote me this letter in beautiful copper plate handwriting.
Oh, how lovely.
Wow. Saying, look, I'm so sorry, Roger, but they are all Corrie reflexes.
You thought you'd struck gold with species diversity. Did you do the same with Grevillea alpinas?
Oh, well, that, you can...
All the colour variants of that?
Oh, yes. They're going to all be divided up, I think.
Are they really?
Alpine is going to be split up.
Yeah.
So fascinating.
Even in the Grampians, there's some suckering forms and there's a...
Kind of makes sense because, like, the Nawa Grevillea is really not that different to Alpina, but that got split. Yeah.
Well, you've got the Dandenong Ranges ones and King Lake similar. And you've got... There's a whole range here.
Yep. On the Grampians, Saturday the 3rd and Sunday the 4th of October is the Pomonal Wildflower Show. And that's a big one as well.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. That's the opportunity to see the Gramps condensed into the Pomonal Hall.
And lots of stuff from everywhere else.
Yeah. So Pomonal Flower Show on the 3rd and 4th of October. And then comes the garden fairs, the Bolobec Garden Fair on the 3rd and 4th of October out on the Macedon Ranges. And, you know, that has 50 vendors, 50 different stallholders, nurseries, all manner of sort of...
Tools and everything.
Tools. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit like a Mifkus in terms of...
cool.
You know,
wow.
Yeah. So that's Bolobec Garden Fair on the 3rd and 4th of October out in the Macedon Ranges.
Mm-hmm.
Royal Botanic Gardens Cranbourne, something that... we're strongly associated with here, have got their plant sale on the 10th and 11th of October. So that should be great. Like a huge, I was there last week and just a huge selection of plants, many of which are of the Australian garden. So it's that opportunity to take a little bit of the Australian garden home with you.
They do such a good job.
They do an amazing job.
Like every time I've been, without fail, there'll be one, just the one plant.
Yeah.
I've never seen it before. I don't know what the hell it is.
Yeah, right.
And then I'll buy it and then you find out there's like 10 left in the wild.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, what a treat.
You always strike gold.
Yeah, what a treat. The following weekend, the
Melbourne
is the Melbourne Royal Botanic Gardens Melbourne plant sale.
Mm-hmm.
Are you involved in the bump in of that at all?
Yes, it happens? Often bump in and bump out. I'm often involved in, but it's sort of a team effort. So whether this year I will, I'm not sure. But they often as well collect a lot of camellias from the camellia collection sell as well at the plant sale. So hopefully they'll have some. Nice ones too going this year.
It's good. And again, it's an opportunity to take a little bit of the Melbourne gardens home with you.
Yes. And it, like Adrian said, it's one of those things where you walk through the gardens and just are tempted by everything. It's your opportunity to go, I love that plant. I'll take that one and I'll take that one. And I've always liked that one. Yeah. So it's really lovely. They do a great job.
Do you get to take plant material, have access to plant material before it goes on sale? Get the really hot stuff?
No comment.
Inside scoop.
Inside scoop. Next question, please.
Folks, the passes to the Clivia show have both gone, and there are still two more passes to the Fernie Creek Garden Show remaining. So if you wanted to grab tickets to the Fernie Creek show, it's 9419015.
I'm really looking forward to going this year to the Fernie Creek show, and I did a talk there a couple of weeks ago, and even their garden is just
amazing. So nice.
It was my first time there and it's beautiful.
Their garden is remarkable.
It really is. Yeah, they do an incredible job.
Yeah. And as part of the spring fair, they run tours of the Fernie Creek garden, which is just remarkable. I reckon there's one of the best Nothofagus that I've ever seen in cultivation there. You know, some remarkable plants. So that's Don Tease. Al. So I think Don's running some tours.
Yeah,
cool. Oh, great. Yeah,
which would be great.
Yes.
So there were still a couple of passes to the Fernie Creek on 9419015.
Mm-hmm.
The Gippsland Rare and Unusual Plant Fair is on the 10th and 11th of October. So that's returning to West Gippsland near Warragul. Similar sort of deal, lots of vendors, lots of stalls, catering and the like. And that's out at Lardner Park out in Gippsland. So the Gippsland Rare and Unusual Plant Fair on the 10th and 11th of October.
Mm-hmm.
This event season just keeps rolling.
It keeps going.
We've mentioned the Melbourne Friends Plant Sale on the 17th and 18th of October. Last but not least is the Yarra Valley Garden Expo out there at Quail Road, Wandon. But that's a little bit later in the year. That's the 7th and the 8th of November.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot on.
Our cups are going to be very full.
Yeah, very full.
We're all very happy. Yeah.
And
that's amazing.
And these garden fairs and, you know, they're wonderful opportunities to go and meet the growers and actually have a conversation about, you know, that little obscure thing that you wouldn't get anywhere else.
Mm, definitely.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's a wonderful opportunity to sort of tap into, you know, some of that interesting plant material and really great plant growers as well.
Mm.
Oh, the knowledge that they have.
Yeah.
So skilled.
Yeah, it's next level, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of, I'm going to get political here, it's kind of the antithesis of the
big green
shed. Big green shed.
Yes.
Yeah.
For sure.
You know, it's people that are experts in their field, people that have been collecting plant material for, you know, their entire lives, and you have access to some of that material. Yeah.
And their knowledge.
And their knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
How many growing friends do you reckon there are, Rog, in the group at Cranbourne?
I think it's probably about 35 to 40, maybe. I'm not too sure exactly.
Yeah, it'd be another way, wouldn't it?
They've had to limit it because of working space.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And they've had people on a waiting list. And I think they do that at Melbourne too.
A waiting list.
When I first signed up, I was like, oh, yeah, I'm going to get in that. And the waiting list was years. And I was like, oh, okay, I'll wait. Fair.
And we mentioned Marianne last week, but it's also worth a shout out that there's been a changing of the guard with the growing friends at Cranbourne. Marianne and her surname, Rog?
Rook.
Marianne Rook has she'll still be involved with the Growing Friends, but has stepped away from the coordinator role, and we've got Kim McKee, who's picking it up. And but Marianne was there for, I don't know, was it 20 years, right?
Yeah.
It was thereabouts.
Maybe more.
Maybe more. So, you know, a huge contribution. So
yeah,
a huge thanks to Marianne for 20 years of Growing Friends.
Yeah. Oh, amazing. Thank you, Marianne. Yes, I mean, all the Growing Friends are pretty spectacular, aren't they? And they do such a wonderful job, but then all the work they do then goes towards scholarships and things like that. So they give so much, I think, to the gardens and to the garden community.
Mm, definitely.
And yeah. Amy, you have been the recipient, or you're about to be the recipient of a Friends scholarship.
Yes, yes. So Terry Smythe, who looks after the Southern Chinese collection.
She's a legend.
She's absolutely a legend. We were awarded a Friends scholarship as well as another scholarship that was donated by Meg Bentley to go to China for 3 weeks. So we leave in September. We leave on the 20th of September. And we're going to three different provinces to see camellias in the wild. We're going to connect with multiple different sort of botanical institutes there. So it's a project that we've sort of called Branching Forward, and it's all about succession. So for someone like Terry, who has years of knowledge, years of experience, she's been to China many times, all the connections that she already has in China, it's about her being able to share that with sort of a younger, up-and-coming horticulturalist, which I am very lucky to be.
That is such a beautiful thing.
Yeah. Isn't that a beautiful thing?
And to sort of get to meet some of those connections that she's made, and for both of us to make new connections. Again, we were hoping, we were sort of going at this time because it's autumn, they're hoping we might collect seed, but some of the laws have changed in China and it's a lot harder now. So it's more about going and seeing them in the wild, collecting all that data. You know, we'll bring all our GPSs and everything. And again, about creating new connections with a lot of the institutes and things that we'll visit. So lucky, so excited, and I'm so grateful to the Friends for this amazing opportunity for supporting us to do it.
Incredible.
It's going to be amazing. Yeah.
So, so good.
That's soon.
That's soon. We leave on the 20th of September.
Okay. Can you send
me pictures? She knows the date.
Yeah, yeah,
I've got it locked in. Flight, counting down the days.
QF.
So I think I said it last time, but it would be so great to, you know, maybe next year when we get back to have Terry on the show. Because
it'd be great to have Terry.
Terry's knowledge is another level.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Post-field trip.
Yeah.
Debrief.
Yeah. Debrief, on all things debrief. Camellias and Southern Chinese plants. Yeah, it would be so fun.
That would be remarkable. and look, to see plants in the wild, it just sort of helps piece all the pieces together in terms of cues and tips and sort of hints as to what they might require in cultivation.
Yeah, definitely.
Nothing quite like it, is there?
No, 100%. Yeah.
Absolutely. I think it's that knowledge that we're going to be able to come and sort of put into play in our camellia collection and Southern Chinese collection in the gardens, just even for the plants that are growing around the camellias in the wild.
The associated species.
Associated species and the climate and things like that. It just, like you said, it pieces it all together for you and helps you to hopefully be able to improve the collection as well.
For sure.
And all conservation focused too, lots of conservation works and things. So, indeed. Yeah.
You've been to China botanizing, Roger, have you?
Oh, yeah, semi-botanizing. I took 5 tours there in 1985 to 1989, just prior to the...
Garden tours?
Yeah. And we visited a lot of botanic gardens, a lot of natural spots.
Did you go to Kunming?
Kunming. Mm-hmm. We went to Kunming, I think, maybe 3 times.
Yeah.
The most interesting spot, the first time we visited there, there was a big influx of American backpackers.
Into China?
In Kunming.
Yeah, right.
Especially, and they were trying to work out why. And at that stage, they were using a certain plant as a bedding plant, which had serrated leaves and it was green.
Flowers in the axles.
Yeah. So they were because it was used as an ornamental plant, marijuana, you know. and and they quickly removed those plantings. Right. They were down the main street of Kunming.
This is in the, what, 1985. That's really funny. Did you take photographs of the crop?
No, look, we didn't take photos there, but there was marijuana being grown in botanic gardens as ornamental plants.
As ornamental plants.
Yeah. Because they are quite a pretty plant.
Oh, it is. Yeah, the foliage is.
Sure,
John.
Oh, that's so funny, Rog.
Yeah, no, so, yeah, we went to some great places and places where there hadn't been many so-called, you know, non-Asian people.
Western folk,
so,
yeah.
A place called Jujago, which has these fantastic lakes. And yes, no, so, you know, it was great.
And so many of our, you know, traditional staple garden plants are things from China. You know, it's the biodiversity of the plant life, the diversity of plant life in China is next level.
Yeah,
incredible.
No, that's right.
Yeah.
And they had a different approach to gardening. But at that stage when we were there, they were probably just, the local people were just starting to grow plants, and you'd come across little patches of plants outside a little, you know, alleyway.
In terms of using them for ornamentation.
Yeah. It was just starting. And it's changed dramatically now.
Yeah for sure. Mm-hmm. We will do a show, Amy and,
no pressure.
And Terry. No. I think it'd be really great to
because like even the landscapes are going to be stunning.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because it's sort of, correct me if I'm wrong, you'll be in an area which is kind of like the end of the Himalayas and then going into the plains.
Yeah.
So, oh my God, that's going to be so
out of Kunming, you know, there's big mountains and rhododendrons everywhere.
Camellias everywhere. Leculia. Oh, God, you know.
Oh,
it.
Yeah. There's of course.
So many of those garden plants are from China. Is it Kunming subtropical?
Well, they call it the city of eternal spring, Kunming.
Okay.
The temperature-wise is pretty good. It doesn't vary a great deal.
Okay.
And, so they can grow lots of things there.
We've had a couple of people jump onto the text line. Just noting on the 19th of September that Maranoa Botanic Garden, they have an open day, which is celebrating 100 years of Maranoa.
Wow. Oh, 100 years.
100 years of Maranoa. So it's on the 19th of September, Maranoa Botanic Garden open day. Catherine from Dandenong is saying, good morning. I heard that Amy gave a really interesting talk at Fernie Creek recently unfortunately she missed. Are you doing any more talks?
Oh, that's so nice, Catherine. Thank you. It was honestly so much fun to get to go there, and they're such a lovely group of people. So, yes, I actually had just roughly sort of spoken about potentially, again, after our trip to China, maybe doing a camellia talk
at Fernie Creek.
Okay. So nothing officially booked in, but it was just something that we discussed. So I would love to come back and definitely give another talk. And again, maybe Terry might want to come and we could do it together.
Tag team,
yeah. It'd be great to have her input in all this too. So I would love to give some more. I'm definitely open to it. And, yeah, we sort of discussed maybe also doing a camellia talk, which the previous one was more on escarpment horticulture and things like that. So, we'd love to come and do more. So hopefully I'll get to, catch up with Catherine next time.
It would be very remiss of us not to just mention that Amy, you are the recipient of an International Conservation Award this year. It's the Marsh Award.
Yes.
Yeah. Associated with Botanic Gardens Conservation International.
Yes.
And there was an online event maybe a couple of weeks ago that kind of acknowledged that. And look, for those that haven't heard, tell the story. How did you come to, the abridged version?
Of escarpment horticulture, yes.
And how that led to an international award.
Yes. Oh, thanks for mentioning it, John. It's I still am in shock. I still can't quite believe it. But yes, pretty much I'm trying to keep it condensed, but my team leader, Tim Ubergang, and I sort of Well, the background is that at the Royal Botanic Gardens, Melbourne, I look after a collection, which is the Grey Garden Collection. And then connected to that is sort of this small but steep escarpment that to be able to access it, you need to abseil and climb. And so my team leader, Tim Ubergang, and I, once we sort of started accessing the escarpment, we realised how it's also an incredible space to be able to host threatened and endangered cliff-dwelling species in a really protected area, you know, many of which are threatened because of severe poaching and things like that. So we started planting and now have these wonderful collections of both native and exotic threatened and endangered cliff-dwelling species. And from here, it sort of then led on to some presentations. I went to Singapore and presented on some of this work and connected with other gardens. And then was invited by Threatened Species Conservancy to go on this amazing field trip last year with Ollie Sherlock from Cranbourne Botanic Gardens into Dewar National Park and Woodbilligan National Park to collect an endangered eucalypt that was growing on 300-metre cliff faces.
Eucalyptus stenostoma?
Stenostoma, that's the one. And then so from this amazing project, we were also we collected lots of seed and we shared it with the herbarium in Sydney and the plant bank, Eurobadella Botanic Garden. So it was this massive collaboration of multiple organisations. We've now grown on some of the stenostoma in an ex situ collection again on the escarpment and at Cranbourne. So all of these sort of things, all these different works, I think
all came together
and all contributed to the award. But I always try and highlight that, you know, I getting the praise for it, but this is a massive collaboration of so many people. And I think it also highlights all their work too. So many other people have been involved. I just was very lucky to sort of get the award.
Be the ultimate recipient.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but no, good on you,
Thank
Amy.
You.
It's
well so kind. Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
I think
sure.
Ollie enjoyed it all too.
Yeah, I think you might have.
Ollie was amazing. I couldn't have done it without him.
He's a good rock climber.
He's a good rock climber. He does rock climbing, you know, all over the place. And he does it for leisure and for... you know, but so he was being paid. to do his hobby.
To combine his two passions, he said it was great. And again, these were sort of untouched cliff faces, so his knowledge was so necessary of how, you know, you don't have anchor points or anything.
How do you deal with that?
Yeah, exactly.
Good on you, Ollie. just to let listeners know that the passes to Fernie Creek and the Clivia show are all gone. There'll be more handouts, giveaways handouts. There'll be more giveaway opportunities next weekend, so tune in then. You are listening to the 3CR Garden Show. My name's John Arnott, joined today by Roger Elliott, Adrian Keane and Amy Downey. We'd love listeners to jump in on any of the conversations that we're having this morning. If you've got a gardening question, we would love to hear that too. Call in on 9419 0155, and you can also text a question through on 0488 809 855. It's Wattle Day tomorrow, so happy Wattle Day in advance of tomorrow.
Yay!
And we thought with this lovely panel that we could explore all things acacia and all things wattles. And I thought we'd actually maybe start with a little bit of wattle or acacia, some fun facts and some myth busting, and perhaps the most persistent myth associated with wattles is the fact that everyone blames them for hay fever and asthma.
Not true.
Well, we would like to debunk that on the 3CR Gardening Show this morning. It's not true, Roger.
No, it's not true.
Because?
Well, back in the, might have been late 1980s, a chap called Professor Bruce Knox at Melbourne University Botany School, who suffered from hay fever, decided to have a good look at pollen-producing plants. And the outcome was that it was mainly ryegrass. That was the main problem for hay fever. And he looked at a lot of the different wattles, and there are some species that can cause problems, and they're mainly the taller, feathery-leaved wattles.
The tree ones,
yeah, Acacia diobata.
Mernsii,
Decurrens, things like that.
The
pollen of wattle flowers is very, very heavy.
Yep.
Compared to lots of other pollen.
Yep.
So it drops to the ground.
Yep.
And you can see lots of pollen often on the ground anyway from a whole range of plants. But, so it's mainly the grass, ryegrass especially.
Tree pollen, pines, conifers, that sort of fine.
Well,
dust
I think
pollen.
Some people have made, there may be allergies to some things, and you know, for plane trees, you know, people suffer badly.
Sure.
Liquid ambers, I think, problems. Adrian might know.
Adrian
about
just there was a little. You looked a bit cross when we mentioned plane trees.
I don't want to talk about plane trees. It's a sore point at work.
I can read that in your body language.
We're really struggling with knowing what to do with plane trees.
Yeah.
From a management perspective.
Tell us why.
I've got to walk a line.
Yeah.
So we have issues around allergens. We have issues around property damage. But we also have, like, nothing reaches that scale and has that capacity.
In terms of ultimate size of the tree?
Yeah.
Yeah,
and
sure.
Adaptability, pruning.
Yep.
Like, we've had trees that you've hacked the structural roots off it and they're fine. I don't know of many trees that you can do that to.
Which makes them really good candidates for urban trees.
They're the perfect urban tree, except they're not at the same time.
Yeah.
Like, as an arborist, so a lot of my work revolves around street tree planting and park planting, and the biggest question I have is trying to find trees that find that Goldilocks zone of ticking as many boxes as possible. It's impossible.
Yeah.
Like, I've had people complain about crepe myrtles. Like, what?
Yeah, what?
They're so... They're
not a big tree. They're beautiful. They're not gonna,
they do everything. Yeah. But, yeah, so it's really, really hard. And plane trees are... It's stressful as an arborist knowing what to do about them.
Because a lot of people really do suffer from plane tree stuff.
Is
that because it's an irritant rather than a...
It's the trichomes on the leaves
get caught
and the
in
stems.
Throats and stuff.
Because
people assume that it's the little bommy knockers when they puff open. But
is that the technical term?
Yes. Yeah. The bommy knockers. Sorry. But plane trees are... It's so hard to know what to do.
Mm. Mm. Looping back to wattles, are there any wattles that you would suggest might be good candidates as street trees?
Yeah, of course. My favourite at the moment is Weeping Mile.
Yeah.
So Acacia pendula. Fantastic street tree. Really good on heavy clay. They're not massive. They're not tiny.
Beautiful.
They respond well to pruning. They're easy to establish. Because that's a big problem that we have at a council is that it's very difficult to get trees to establish, and it's councils across all of Melbourne. Because you're on a tight time frame, tight budget, minimal input, and a streetscape is a rough place to try and get something to grow.
Right.
Sure is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Weeping Mile's probably my top go-to for a wattle.
And a beautiful shape.
Yeah, super ornamental.
Yeah.
Because that's something you're always looking when doing street tree planting is you always want a value add.
Yeah.
You want to get that little bit extra across the line wherever you can.
Yeah.
So they're a really great choice, and they're a great opt-out if you're looking to get a bit of diversity of species and not rely too heavily on eucalypts.
So that might be in the Goldilocks zone. Because
they're close,
can deal with heavy soil.
Yep, they
wet,
don't
dry.
Do amazingly pruning around power lines.
Okay.
Like I'm just, my anecdotal observations with wattles is they're not the most responsive to pruning. So that's probably the one thing. But yeah, Weeping Miles is a great one because they're also long lived.
Yeah, long
lived. Because in the past, we've planted acacia and plexa as street trees.
Yeah,
and
they can be short.
That's not, like, it just doesn't work for some reason in a streetscape. They live really quickly and die really quickly, and then they sucker like crazy.
They can't.
Because at one point, I guess that might have been about council having an indigenous plant policy and acacia, is it, or implexa?
Yes.
That would be the only one that.
So
might
you've got
fit the mold?
Two. You've got acacia plexa, acacia melanoxylin.
Okay.
Problem with melanoxylin can be borers and then also drought resilience. They're not as tolerant.
Because they're a gully
in
plant.
The northeast. So they're indigenous to the area, but they're a riparian plant.
Right.
And so you're really pushing your limitation in a nature strip.
Yep.
Yeah, and I think the melanoxylins from down on the lower plains aren't nearly as long-lived as the ones up in the
And they're a different
mountains.
Shape, aren't they?
They're
almost a shrub.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Quite different.
So back to the pollen.
Yeah.
The myth of acacias causing hay fever. I mean, they could certainly be an irritant rather than an allergen, but essentially the pollen is not airborne.
No, no, it drops to the ground very quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, we tend to think of acacias as being, you know, iconically Australian, but they occur in other places.
Well, depends on where you belong.
and your view on taxonomy, is that?
Yeah, well, look at, you know, there was a big acacia war that went on in the 80s and 90s.
The battle lines were drawn.
Oh, they were, and they still are to some degree. Yeah, because the original acacia was Acacia nilotica from Africa. That has had precedence of name,
yep,
botanical
name. Because it was the first one described?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And so there was a lot went on, and in the end at botanical congresses it was decided that Australia should have the name of acacia. And there were,
which goes against the convention.
Yeah, it does. And one of the reasons for that is that Australia, you know, had the greatest number of species, and
by a fair margin, yeah.
Oh yeah, quite a lot.
Yeah.
So they divided up into 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 different genera, and the acacia's got about 1,088 species. Most of which are in Australia. 12 are in Asia. There's one in Africa at the moment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But then a lot of the other things were called Vachellias, V-A-C-H-E-L-L-I-A.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And there's about 164 of those. And they're scattered through the Americas, Africa and Asia.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But they're acacia-like.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And because an Australian botanist, he was dividing them up. And I'm just trying to remember what he was calling them. Racosperma.
Yeah.
And so that caused a lot of irritation within the botanical world in Australia. And so in the end, Bruce Pedley, I think his name was, he was defeated.
Okay. So Racosperma is not a thing?
No.
Okay.
No, that's all so-called synonym. Okay. For a lot of plants. So, okay. Yeah, so look at, and it's still simmering.
Yeah.
The next Botanical Congress, I'm sure it'll come up again.
It'll come up. As a standing item.
Yeah, and it's the African and the American botanists, they're pretty upset.
Yeah. And, you know, it goes against the convention because they are just weight of numbers?
Yeah, I think so. And I think a lot of the... one of the main reasons that the Australia got the gong was that fact it would be a huge amount of work just to change all the herbarium labels where all the specimens are stored, and just that.
So logistics?
Logistics and really? Things like that would have been a huge, huge area. So anyway, watch this space. You never know what may happen, but I'm not too sure when the next Congress is. Probably another 3 or 4 years.
Okay. Just a note here saying that today is the last day of the Waverley Garden and Floral Art Festival out at the Waverley Community Centre. So last day to go to the Waverley Garden and Floral Art Festival. Just to add to the list of events. there's also a question here about, Wattle Day. I've been saying that it's Monday. It's actually Tuesday, the 1st of the 9th. Thanks to Susie for that.
Because there was a huge, I suppose, back in the days gone by, trying to work out when Wattle Day should be.
Well, Wattle Day has an interesting history.
Yeah. Because I know, I think the Daffodil Day people got a bit upset about.
Because we nominated on the same day as the Daffodil Day. Oh, that's controversy.
Yeah. Yeah. So that, they wanted August the 1st, I think.
Right.
And initially Wattle Day was August the 1st.
Which kind of makes a bit of sense.
Oh,
that's a little bit earlier.
Start coming into flower.
Yeah, yeah. It's hard to know. There's wattles in flower every day of the year, John.
And that's a true statement?
Yeah.
Yep.
Mm. Yeah.
Yep.
Well, I guess with that amount of diversity, over 1,000 species, you're going to have lots of variation. Everything from towering trees through to ground covers, really. There's actually a question here about can the panel recommend some dwarf prostrate wattle species for Melbourne East Park orchards, and there's no name on that. So a nice low-growing prostrate wattle for a park orchards garden?
I've got one. I've actually brought it in as well. I'm going to mangle this species name because it's a long one. Acacia aculeatissima. Did I get that right?
Aculeatissima. There we go.
Snake wattle. That's a good indigenous one.
And low?
Very low. Very prostrate. It'll just spread across the ground.
Okay.
Not super dense. So if you're looking for sort of weed control, it might not be the best choice, but very pretty little plant and locally indigenous.
Any other offers for prostrate?
Oh, there's Acacia amblygona, which it's not local. I think it's from Queensland, maybe. Amblygona, A-M-B-L-Y-G-O-N-A. Winter gold is a nice, nice one. The foliage is, it's broadish, but it's not big.
Okay.
But it's bright gold, and that does well. There's Acacia bifaria too. You don't see around much, but it's, if people know Acacia glaucoptera.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The zigzag clay wattle. Or clay wattle. Yeah, there's bifaria. They used to just be lumped together, and bifaria is narrower. I wonder whether we should mention about phylodes.
I was just going to say, mentioned foliage.
Yeah, foliage.
That's an interesting concept when it comes to wattles.
Wattles, you know, true wattle leaves are the ferny ones, and they disappear off most plants after very small seedling, the leaves go. And you have things called phyllodes, P-H-Y-L-L-O-D-E-S, which are really just an adaptive stem stalk, I think. And they do the work of the leaves, but they're not true leaves.
But they're photosynthetic, and they function that way. But they're not true leaves.
No. So, and Acacia bifaria has these very, how would you explain, not zigzag, but quite, leaves are probably, or the phyllodes are probably around about 2 centimetres wide, a bit wider, and they've got big teeth, and then the flowers actually come out of the centre of those phyllodes.
Oh, how, how remarkable.
And then they have these curly, curly pods.
I love the pods.
You like the pods?
Yeah, I do. They're such a feature.
There's a photo on the 3CR website that you sent through. Of that thing?
I think it was. Yeah,
awesome. Yeah. So quite curly.
Yeah, oh, very curly.
Super
and
curly.
If people want to find out a bit about wattles, there are two really good books.
Okay.
One called Field Guide to Victorian Wattles by F.J.C. Rogers, only small, you know,
that
good,
must be,
good for carrying around with
that
you.
Must be, have a bit of age to it?
Oh, yeah, that's been going for ages, John. And then a fairly recent one, Wattles of Victorian Tasmania by Neville Walsh. Neville Walsh, Dan Murphy, who's been looking at wattles for many years, Arthur Court, who's no longer with us, and Alan Gibb, who is no longer with us.
But
it was Alan Gibb, I think, who really pushed for this to go. Alan Gibb was just, an amateur. Arthur Court was a botanist. But that was released last year, and it's got all the Victorian and Tasmanian wattles in it.
That was fantastic.
People want to...
It does.
And there's also a fantastic website called World Wide Wattle. You go on to the web, and a chap, Bruce Maslin, who's the guru of acacias in Australia, he's a retired botanist, but he's still doing botanical work. He organises that, and that's got a huge amount of information.
Is it the website? Oh, this is going to be a dad joke. www. www.
It's well named, I like it.
Yeah, and Wattles of Victoria and Tasmania, that's a CSIRO publication.
Yeah, publication.
Yeah, it looks like a beautiful book.
It does.
It is, and it's, I know it took them a while to get it all together, but it's, you know, detailed photographs of different parts of plant. I think it's one page or two pages per species. Yeah, so you have, photos and descriptions of whole thing and where you find them.
The habitat, all that stuff. Yeah. Amy, you were looking to say something about a low wattle?
Oh, yes. I was more going to ask, I think, for all of your opinion, but we have the sort of more cascading, but Acacia cardiophylla.
Yep.
I think it's golden lace.
Karanga lace, or it used to be called, but it's probably something lace.
Something like that. Yeah. But that's more where we have it sort of more cascading.
Yeah.
But do you think that would
that's
work?
That's a great choice.
That'll be fine.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful...
There's a lot of prostrate cultivars that are really easy to come by, and if you need something punchier, they're a good option.
They're good, yeah.
Provisima, the prostrate provisima?
Yeah.
Roger's got some here.
That's a solid plant. Karanga Cascade.
Oh,
and
wow.
It was just massed in bud, and I think somebody's been chewing them. So they've been getting a good dose of protein out of the flowers.
Oh, okay.
But it's really good. It'll just keep low. And if it gets up a bit, you can prune it. It does respond quite good to pruning. But the new growth can be slightly purplish. And even the buds, you can see the buds there are slightly purplish in colour. But I planted too many of them. In the front garden, and they just wander through everything, so which is lovely. I like that
sort
really of stuff.
It's really beautiful.
Yeah.
It's always got a red.
Yeah, red stem.
Red stem on it too.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
Yeah.
It's stunning.
So, if you were to plant a drift of those, would you put them at meter centres?
Probably you could get away with a meter and a half.
Meter and a half.
It just wanders everywhere.
Yeah,
and up it's lovely.
Lovely plant.
Roger, you mentioned protein.
Yeah.
I mean, lots of wattles are their seed.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, staple food for First Nations people and, you know, all of that. But there's one, is it Acacia puce? No, there's a...
No, it's Acacia coleii.
That's what I was thinking of.
They use and plant a lot in Africa.
Yeah. For
food production.
Seed, the protein from seed.
And it's been very successful. The thing was, you know, some of the people where they just weren't getting any rainfall, long periods of drought, they were trying to grow annual crops.
Okay.
Flower-type production.
Yeah.
And so a chap from World Vision in Australia, forget his name, but he went across and spent a lot of time over in some of the Central African countries there, and he convinced them to try growing this Acacia coleii, which comes from northwestern Western Australia, and because it was long lived, you know, they didn't have to plough a crop and all that sort of. They had this, and so they would then just go out and put tarpaulins under the plants and collect the seeds.
The seed,
grind the seed and made flour and things. And it's been very successful and quite high protein.
Yeah, like almost as high as, you know, some meats.
Yes, yeah.
Extraordinary.
I think it might even get up 20%.
Yeah, right.
But And then there's, of course, wattle seed.
Wattle seed.
Which is sold, which is mainly Acacia victoriae, I think.
Okay.
But some wattle seed have lots of cyanide in them, so you've got to watch out.
You have to know your species.
And with the wattle seed, you can use that as a substitute for coffee too. It makes quite a good drink.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So, and you can buy wattle seed now in lots of different places
for making damper for using as a flower.
There's lots of uses, and there's also uses of flowers in perfumery.
Okay.
Acacia dilbata in France.
There you go. As the base note.
Yeah, yeah.
There you go.
Cool.
There's other, I'm trying to think. There's a couple of others which are used. They have used Acacia pycnantha too for perfumery. I've got some notes here. Here we go. Acacia retinoides in Italy.
Oh, yeah.
They've used for perfumery.
There you go.
And Acacia baleana. Really? A good use for baleana. But, yeah, so...
Cuda bloody mundra wattle, which I think is how it's actually listed in the index of Kate's book, Kate Blood's book. Yeah. Kate Blood's got a weed book.
Yeah.
And in the index it says Cuda bloody mundra wattle.
Yeah. Well, that probably should mention that there are quite a few weedy species.
They can get away, yeah.
Acacias,
yeah. And, do you want to run through a couple of those, Roger? There's Podalirifolia.
Yeah, well, there's even Diobata can Diobata. Be in some yep. places. Acacia decurrens.
Yep.
Acacia elata can be.
Sophorae.
Yeah, can be. Longifolia.
Longifolia.
Saligna.
Saligna is, Saligna's one for sure.
Yeah.
And... Acacia prominens.
Okay.
People, there was Edna Walling's favourite. She planted that everywhere. And, overseas, of course, there have been problems. California, Acacia diobata, Acacia melanoxylon.
Yep.
Problems there. Acacia paradoxa, which was declared a weed here
for years. Weed.
Noxious weed.
An indigenous plant is a noxious weed. I thought that was curious.
Yeah, because of mainly farming community, they reckon they... Good place for rabbits underneath.
Yeah, okay. It's probably
true.
Right.
It's
yeah.
true. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Africa, of course, Acacia saligna.
Yeah.
If you've been to Africa, Acacia cyclops.
Cyclops is weedy.
Yeah, in Africa, it's bad.
Yeah.
Bad. Acacia Mearns eye, too, of course.
Yeah.
Bad. But, well, with Acacia Mearns eye, because it was used for tanning for a long, long time.
Yep.
When you used to get tan bark. These people in here wouldn't know about tan bark, John.
Tan bark?
Do you know about tan bark?
I'd know about tan bark.
Yeah, tan bark mulch. Yeah. That
was
Acacia Mearns eye bark. Yeah.
There you go.
Oh, wow.
There you go.
So, yes.
I mean, we tend to think of the Melbourne Gardens in that European model and, it has a European look and feel, but it's probably a little-known fact that half of the living collection... or more than half of the living collection are actually Australian plants, Australian native plants.
Yep.
A bunch of wattles there.
Yes.
Are there any sort of standouts in the living collection at Melbourne?
So many. And I actually was going to ask you, because you mentioned Acacia puce, and I was talking with David Roberts, who is, I am now calling him the Wattle Man. He was the person I went to when I knew the show was
Dr.
coming
Wattle.
Out. Yeah. Dr. Wattle, who gave me as well some of his favourites that I definitely want to talk about. But he said to mention Acacia puce and even see if you were growing it, Roger.
No.
You had a crack at it.
I haven't grown it. Look, we may have got some seed yonks ago, but Acacia puce has got the... probably the hardest wood just about known to man, I think.
Yeah, really? Mm. Really?
Yeah. It is,
how about that?
A friend of Trevor Blake, Trevor.
Yeah.
He was a mad wood turner and he just gave up on Acacia puce.
Blunted all of his tools.
Blunted all his tools.
There you go.
But it's also a very rare species and it lives, it's in, I think it's the Clark Reserve, there's in South Australia.
Right. Yeah.
Where Acacia puce its main stand. But,
Well, and I think they've just planted one at the garden
have they?
State.
Okay.
Which
it'd be interesting to see how it goes.
Yeah. Hopefully it does well.
And does it have is it the largest phyllode? No.
No, that's Acacia dunyi, isn't it?
That's dunyi. I'm getting my acacias. Oh, there's only 1,000 of them.
Just a few.
That's the elephant's ear as well.
That's the elephant ear as well, yeah.
Yes.
Which is a Kimberley plant.
Kimberley plant.
Some of the others at Melbourne?
Yes. Yeah. Well, so one that I really love is the Acacia denticulosa.
Oh, yeah.
Denticulosa.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
I think is like the sandpaper wattle.
Yes.
And I think the flowers look like sort of big twisties almost.
They do. Like a chicken twisty.
Yeah. So that's flowering. Flowering at the moment. That's in the herbarium bed if you're going to Melbourne.
Yes.
But that's a really beautiful one that I think can get up to 4 metres. Is
yeah,
that?
It can yeah. get a bit yeah. that, I think. Yep.
It's much smaller.
It's a bit
gardens,
of a troublesome plant for a lot of people. So,
as in hard to grow? Or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I was going to say, I tried growing it once or twice and it, no, yeah. it's touchy.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It, all right, well, I'll...
Likes 25 hours of sunshine, I think. And,
yes. know, full sun.
Very good drainage.
Perfect okay. drainage. Yeah. Excellent airflow is a
yes,
must.
Yes.
Because
yes.
those little yes. sticky phylodes just attract yeah. pathogens.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
So yeah. not
That's
a...
what my old, mine all succumbed to. Fungus nibbled on the phylodes
oh,
and
no.
they died.
Yeah.
Okay.
But beautiful if you can get one to grow.
Yeah.
So
it's one of those ones
the...
worth having a crack at. Like, just throw it in, see what happens.
Okay.
Nothing lost if it fails.
Could
that's
make a,
true.
A
that's
good
true.
Tub plant, actually. For
yeah,
people.
Definitely.
Oh, that's a
yeah.
good idea.
Yeah, for sure.
The other one is I wanted to bring it up because I read the backstory of it and I'd love to know actually how much of fact this is, but it's obviously... The red wattle, which is such a such a favourite.
Yeah.
So that's Acacia leprosa,
yep.
is
yep.
it? Scarlet Blaze?
Yes.
yes. Mm. So at Cranbourne and at Melbourne as well.
Flowering at the moment?
That's a
flowering. Yep. Yes, yes, it is.
Yep.
yep. And so what I read about it was that it was a mutation
mm-hmm.
that naturally occurred in the wild that mm-hmm. sort of bushwalkers came across.
Yep.
And then that... Cuttings were sent to the National Herbarium at the RBGV, and then that the one that was growing in the wild died.
Mm-hmm.
So when this went into cultivation, every single plant now is actually a clone of the one that's growing at the RBG.
Yep,
yeah, that,
is that correct?
Yeah, that, spot
that,
on.
That could be. Yeah, the it was a group from the I think it was the Foothills Australian Plant Society. They found it.
Yes, yep.
And then they took a bit off it to show Evan Klukas at Karanga.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
and
right.
Evan said, go and see Roger. So they come and saw me. And then I think I said to them, look, you should, you know, take that into the herbarium.
Yeah.
And
oh, wow.
So, but there's many stories about
Scarlet
different
Blaze.
Things. Which I just keep my mouth shut.
Yeah.
It sounds like there's so much more to it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We'll have to dive a bit deeper over a cup of tea after the show.
Yes.
But it, you know, it's a remarkable thing because you know 99.9% of the wattles are yellow flower.
Yellow. Mm-hmm.
And here's this red variant.
Yeah.
Remarkable
yeah, look,
story.
Yeah, that's right, and. Because sometimes when you look at buds, well, even
Provisma.
Acacia provisma yeah. here, you can see the anthocyanins, I suppose, the reddish coloration in some of the buds.
Yeah.
Mm.
And even when, you know, you go in Western Australia, you see some that quite have that quite touch of red
yeah.
in bud.
Yep.
And, yeah, but it's interesting because there's now seedlings been taken off that plant, and I think it's called apricot something.
Yeah,
yeah. There's yeah. apricot confetti or apricot that, glow.
Yeah, yeah.
Lindy Harris is growing all yeah, of them
that,
together,
that's right. Lindy,
which just looks amazing.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
that's great. Yeah,
so, and because there's Acacia purpurea petala, which is a naturally occurring low spreading wattle up on out back of. Herberton, Queensland.
Yeah.
It's purple, definitely purple.
Yeah.
And
tricky to cultivate?
Yeah, well, we collected seed at one stage. It doesn't produce much seed. And we gave some to a friend who lived up near Horsham, farmer Albie Lindner, a great Australian plant bloke who used to, when he was a kid, go to the Grampians and nobody knew the names of the plants, so they used to make up their own. But Albie had this great collection of stuff and I said, would you be interested? Oh, yeah. So I think we gave him 4 seeds and he had 2 in his mouth for a couple of days. Luckily, there wasn't any cyanide in it. But he just... let his saliva do the work.
What a curious thing to
yeah,
do.
And that he planted is... and they grew. But
unique.
They didn't last for that long.
Wow.
A unique form of stratification.
Yeah, yeah. So, it's a bit of a problem down here. Although it grows up where eucalyptus, well, now Corymbia citradora grows.
Okay.
Oh, up okay.
In the high country. In that country, right.
In the high country, yeah. There. And on the Atherton table, or above the Atherton tableland.
Right.
And so it probably would take a little bit of frost, yeah. Maybe.
Interesting. Roger, there's a question here about your blue grevillea, whether you could just repeat the name of
the blue grevillea. Oh, yeah. Okay, the grevillea that we showed before is Grevillea shirisii. It's S-H-I-R-E-S-S-I. And it's from New South Wales. It's rare and endangered in the wild, but it's you can find it now and again.
Mm.
Cranbourne Friends did have it.
Yeah.
I don't know whether they've got it for this sale or not.
Not sure. Yep.
But
Shirisii.
Shirisii.
Excellent.
And Lindy Harris, she loves it too. So if yeah, good. Know Lindy. So.
There's a few of those greeny flower. We're talking about wattles today. Don't get excited. on the line, we actually have a call. We have Angrid Wynne Jones from an organisation called Creative Climate about an event called Planting, which is a month-long community-led planting events around Melbourne. Are you there, Angrid?
I am.
Thanks for calling in this morning. I saw this during the week, and it looks fascinating. It is a community event around the cultural practices associated with planting plants. Could you tell us some more about planting and what it is and how you can get involved?
Absolutely. Thank you. Yeah. So planting is a project that we put together between Creative Climate, the organisation that I'm part of, and MAPCO and Fed Square.
Okay.
So we did it for the first time last year, and it was really celebrating the incredible work that people do in their own backyards and in their own, you know, the creeks and the grasslands and all around Naarm. Every weekend there's folks getting out and doing some caring for country. We really wanted to celebrate and acknowledge that, but also to maybe think about that kind of regenerative work as a cultural and creative and artistic practice, as well as a kind of hands-on, you know, ecological practice.
Yeah, sure.
So, yeah, this year we've had 13 sites across Naarm and beautiful community groups that put up their hand to host some kind of cultural practice alongside planting and weeding and, you know, all the business of care for country. So we've had some amazing folk involved, First Nations elders, artists, poets, painters, and, you know, after doing some putting your fingers in the soil and planting grasses and native trees and in all sorts of spaces all around Naarm, we've also had these beautiful cultural practices and sharing of knowledge. A sense of, you know, we need to pay attention to nature in order to be able to look after it properly and value it in a way that maybe we always have known to do but have become maybe disconnected from, you know, for all the reasons of the neo-capitalist project.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, planting a tree that's going to be there for generations. I mean, that's an act of optimism, isn't it?
Absolutely. I think that is the thing that, we did some evaluation of the project last year, and I've never come across such a strong sense of like satisfaction and commitment and pleasure and enjoyment from folk that were doing that work. Because it's caring for something beyond ourselves for generations to come. You know, in times of climate crisis, it can feel really overwhelming and disempowering. And I think, actually just spending time restoring and regenerating and connecting with each other and leaning into, you know, our capacity to really love and restore nature is a great thing. So, yes, that's been happening through the whole of August every weekend. So we've, I think, up to about 12,000 plants to date.
Oh, how wonderful.
And this is, the last weekend we've got of the community planting, so we'll be down at Westgate Park at 10 o'clock this morning. If people want to head out there, I'm sure there would be some spaces available to come and help.
Terrific.
And there's a beautiful Indigenous man, Kai Lane, who will be sharing some of his incredible work around building habitats for long-nosed turtles and blue fairy wrens and, yeah. Amazing.
How lovely. And the event, the series of planting events, that culminates next weekend at Fed Square?
It does, yeah. So we're going to have a planting party, which is on September 5th, between 10 and 3. And you might know there's that beautiful test garden that's like a microcosm of what Fed Square are up to.
Sure.
In the bigger Lark Bunda project. So it's around that area in the car park, but it starts at 10 until 3, and there's incredible artists and practitioners and knowledge holders with lots of family-friendly workshops in weaving, in making small animals. It's the start of the poor neat season, so there'll be some opportunities to make some little frogs. there's so much planting, botanical drawing, lots of those amazing community orgs that are sharing information and inviting people to join up, from like Urban Gorillas, who are a fabulous group doing lots of incredible planting. So there'll be a great opportunity to hang out. And Kian, beautiful muso, will be performing.
Oh,
and
lovely.
We have the Climate Choir and the Riff Raff Band. So and great food. So what's not to love? All apart from the food, free. So come along.
It sounds fantastic. So that's next Saturday at Fed Square, the planting party. It sounds like a wonderful event, and on the back of a fantastic month of planting.
I just should say, we're planting is also part of Reset, which is Fed Square's free, family-friendly festival about slowing down generally, and that goes on until the 17th of October. So if you can't make the 5th, there'll be other incredible events over the month.
How wonderful. So lovely to hear from you, Angrad. And hope you have a great time of it next weekend.
Thank you so much.
Okay, cheers for now.
Bye-bye.
What a nice thing, a planting party.
Lovely.
Yeah. I love that name.
Yeah. There's a question here for you, Adrian.
Yeah, of course.
About maybe your top couple of selections around street trees, not necessarily wattles.
Top street trees?
Yeah.
Oh, you put me on the spot.
Oh, sorry about that. I should have given you a heads up.
It's super widespread, but just Tristaniopsis larina.
Yeah.
Just larina,
yeah,
not luscious, the cultivar. Yeah. They're pretty tough. They've got a fun little trick. They'll just stop growing if they're not happy. They won't die. They'll just sit there, which is fantastic for a street tree, and then they'll grow in favourable conditions.
Yeah, slow and steady wins the race.
Yeah, sit under power lines nicely, ornamental, don't shed too much stuff, root system isn't a nightmare. So they're a big winner for me.
Mm-hmm.
A tree that I'm really growing to love that's a bit underutilised in Melbourne, probably because we're almost outside its growing range, is Melaleuca quinquevera.
Okay.
I'd love to see more of those as street trees, because like a lot of the Melaleucas, deep roots that go straight down, so you rarely run into trouble with root systems.
Yeah.
Mm.
So they're great. And then for a uke, if you've got space, probably red box, Eucalyptus polyanthemus.
Okay. Solid tree. Yeah.
Fantastic indigenous tree, masses of flowers, oodles of habitat potential.
Great honey.
Yeah. And a beautiful ornamental tree. Yes,
it is. It is.
I've seen lots of, in Greensboro, the Hakea franciscana.
That's an interesting thing as a street tree. Yeah.
What do you think?
So we've struggled with them in my council. They're not, it's not that they're not drought tolerant, it's just that they're a bit particular about moisture content in soil.
Yep.
So if it's too extreme in either direction, it can keel them over.
Yes, okay.
So they're not what I would call reliable.
Mm, I was really surprised to see them, and now I see them quite often.
Yes. Hagia larina is quite reliable, but then you tip into weedy potential.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
So you're walking a really fine line.
Yeah, those attributes of survivability and adaptability and resilience.
Yeah,
it's a big fine line between that and the weed, isn't it?
Yeah, I've been thinking about it a lot recently in trialing new species. It's like, can I use some stuff that's fallen out of favour? It's like, why did that fall out of favour? Mm. That's a great choice. And then I'm like, oh, hang on, it's probably a weed.
Yeah, possibly. we have Ruth on the line here from Bentley East, and a question about Acacia glaucoptera. Are you there, Ruth?
Yes, I am.
What's your question about the clay wattle, Acacia glaucoptera, Ruth?
Well, I've got one growing around the front in full sun, difficult soil condition, but it's doing quite well. I would like to plant some around the back, but because we're on the lower side of our street slope and we get a lot of runoff, so occasionally the bed where I'm thinking about it does get a bit wet.
We'll be fine.
Fine.
When you see them in the wild, sometimes they can be underwater, or not totally.
Oh, really?
Not totally underwater, but if they're in a bit of a swale on the edge of a road, there'll be water sitting around their roots for quite a while. So that should be okay.
Oh, okay. And I can't find anywhere that says or gives some idea of length of life. I'm not expecting it to, go forever.
Yeah,
but
how long lives a glaucoptera?
I would tend to think maybe 10 to 15 years. But
that's fine.
Yeah, that's, I suppose, one of the things with Acacia glaucoptera, you often get this dead stuff in the middle of the plant.
But can you avoid that?
I think by judicious pruning.
trying
to start it while it's young, so you build up the foliage that's going to be around the centre of the plant where the dead stuff happens.
Where the air's not getting in.
Because so far the one that I've got, it's, I don't know how to describe the way it grows. It's very open.
Uh-huh.
And it's got that lovely wavy sort of growth on it so far.
Yeah.
Okay. Terrific. So I'll just be a bit more happier to try them at the back there.
They should be okay because they grow in semi-shade.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's all right because I did notice the other one did get a bit burnt on the very hot day.
Oh, good on you, Ruth. Thanks for calling in. Hope that was helpful.
No, thank you. Okay. Thanks very much for the whole panel because it's a great show every week.
Good on you, Ruth. Appreciate that. Question here. Oh, Roger, the person that you were referring to might be Tony Rinaldi.
That's it. That's the name. Yeah.
So that's coming from John, no location. So okay. Tony Rinaldi.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Amy,
there's a man who went to Africa.
Did the protein planting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Susie's got a question about Acacia aphylla plantings.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's one we prepared earlier.
Is that one that you're growing in the grey garden, Amy?
Yes.
I've got one.
And Adrian, you brought it in. Let's talk Acacia aphylla for a sec.
Do you want to go first?
No, you go.
Oh, I also have glaucoptera, I was going to say, growing in the grey garden too, in a bit of a wet spot. So I agree that it'll be fine. But yes, I think aphylla means leafless. Is that right?
It does.
Yep.
I really, really love it, but it can be sort of a huge beastie. So I have started just regular on one of them. One of them I let it do what it wants, and one of them I sort of prune to keep its form and shape.
Yep.
It's such a lovely, unusual, spiky thing.
It's a weird and wonderful plant.
It's one of the.
I always think that this and Glaucoptera are sort of the iconic wattles of southwestern West Australia. Like you think of a crazy wattle, and it's going to be one of these two. So I've got the same notes for them at my place. Mine's becoming a little bit unwieldy, and it's sort of, as it gets height, it starts to open up the canopy of it. So you do need to reduce it back in and take a bit of it out, which wear gloves because it is spiky. But it's a great choice.
I reckon we're going to say the same thing. I'm going to throw to you, Roger, about Attila Capitani.
Oh, yeah. He I don't know how many he had growing.
But he pollard them or almost coppice them. Yeah. Is that what you were going to say, Roger?
No, I wasn't, but that's fine.
Yeah.
So they can coppice as well. Oh, well, keep that in mind because mine's on a driveway and I'm worrying about the branches getting too far over and scratching the car.
You can coppice your acacia aphylla.
Hard prune when I do the anagazanthus next autumn.
And you had another point of interest on acacia aphylla.
On the photos that were on the Facebook page, there was Acacia glaucoptera growing next to Acacia aphylla.
Mm. Oh, that photo.
I saw that right. one. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so beautiful.
Combination.
But a great habitat for lots of birds and things, yeah. I think, because it can be so big
great
and wild.
Refuge.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Terrific. We have Michael here on line two. A question about fruit trees. Are you there, Michael?
Yes, sorry to move away from the...
That's perfect. It's perfectly fine.
Mix it up.
What's your question on fruit trees, Michael?
Well, I have apples and I have plums, and I didn't get much fruit from them. And I realized that, in fact, it's rats or possums are eating the fruiting spears. Now they're eating the entire branch, so they're basically chewing the top part of the branch. So if I look out of my garden, I can see all this bright area, which used to have, which are trees, which used to have, you know, skin on them, but they don't. It's been venom. Is there anything I can do about that?
Tips for possums eating fruit trees?
Yeah, I was going to say, if it's possums, isolate the canopy as best you can.
Yep.
Get a Jack Russell and leave it in the backyard.
I said the neighbors would like that.
Yeah. They're really hard because ringtails are protected and you can only move them a couple of, not very far from the block if you were to go that avenue.
But is there something that you can put on the actual branches?
Nothing really works. Because what happens is the tree starts to become stressed and so it triggers a cycle of producing more sugary new foliage and material, which draws more possums in, and possums become what are called a habitual browser.
Mm.
So they keep hitting the same target. That's why a lot of exotic plants, particularly in Melbourne in some of our denser areas, really underperform, because once the ringtails get a sniff, they're going in for the kill.
Back. Yeah.
Yeah.
Any thoughts on possums, Rog?
No, well, we've got two Prunus biliana in our backyard, which are just starting to come into leaf, and the ringtails are there already.
Mm.
And they'll be virtually leafless. We just leave them and let it be. But for fruit trees... The other thing is to really, whether if you really want to try and save them, is to build a permanent screen.
I put a non-permanent screen, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
And it worked the first season, but then they figured a way of getting in after that.
Yeah, no, it's a hard one, but something permanent, which may be an eyesore. But
I think I'm going to have to go to... Coles and Willys for my fruit.
Look, won't be as good.
No, it won't be as good, Michael. Yeah, it's a tricky one. But, you know, persist. They could potentially move on to other plants. If you can make it hard for them to access the plants, I mean, I think that might be... I've also heard about a motion-sensitive sprinkler.
I think I heard something about that as well.
That might be worth a shot too.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Good on you, Michael.
Good luck.
Bye.
Thanks.
Bye. There's a tall Carlos from Croydon has noticed a large Lophostomon confertus, which is variegated, but it's reverting to green.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you can do for that?
Prune out the non-variegation.
Yeah.
But you would be constantly doing that?
You will. Yeah, because a lot of things that variegate, it depends on the mechanism that variegation's happening, but they will often try and revert to green foliage. People with variegated houseplants will know that when they buy their $1,000 Monstera, whatever cultivar, that they'll forever be trying to snip out the non-variegated foliage. Because it's often triggered by a virus or something which isn't stable within the plant.
Yep.
So, there's a really good Lophostomon variegated at... Mooney Valley Town Hall.
Okay.
Or their sort of main precinct.
Yep.
Beautiful tree, but it has the same issue. Little pockets of non-variegated foliage pops up.
Yeah. There's one at Maranoa.
Maranoa. I think that started doing it, I think.
Yeah. So tricky. It's persistence.
It'll be persistent, but it's manageable. You just nip it out as they appear. Yep.
Okay. Adrian, could you spell the Melaleuca species that you recommend as a
Jesus.
Street tree? Or re-say it?
Yeah, let's walk it through slowly. So it's Melaleuca quinquevera.
Quinquenervia.
Oh, quinquenervia. I always drop a few syllables.
I'm going to put you on the spot here. Do you want to have a crack at spelling it?
Yeah, Q-U-I-N-E-R-V-I. Oh, wait on. Quinquenervia. Maybe. Maybe. Quinquenervia. Five nerves.
Yep, spot on. Terrific, Roger. That's
well
great.
Done.
There's a few questions about sourcing interesting and unusual wattles. People are struggling to find scarlet blaze and a few others. Good sources of acacias.
I could do my top because I've been doing this for a long time now.
You've got your spreadsheet.
Yeah, I'll crack out the spreadsheet. So your go-to should always be, just as a little plug, Karunga. You know, your gold star for native plants. Yep. You've got two options of location now. Then your growing friends sale. So Cranbourne and Melbourne are both excellent. I've got a couple of plants on the table that were one-offs from their sales, which I assume they might have been trial propagations and then there was overflow because I don't know how they got in there.
Folks, we've got to wind the show up. I've just realised that we're... Thanks, Adrian. Thanks, Amy. Thanks, Roger. Thanks, folks, for listening. You've been listening to the 3CR Garden Show. We'll catch you next week.
Bye.
See ya.
Bye.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast. If you found it valuable, please consider donating or subscribing to support independent community radio. To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au.